Every city needs a hub. We've always prided ourselves on being as international as possible. So more than 60% of our content this year is international.
Any city can set up a design festival, but attracting the industry's best demands something a little more thoughtful. The London Design Festival blends big talent and big business, but is it still a sought-after meeting place for industry professionals? We'll sit down with the man in charge of it all today on Section D. This is Section D, Monocle's dedicated weekly design show, and I'm your host, Josh Fennett. Also today...
We believe in collaboration, we believe in working together, we believe that our cultures can meet, and still that we can produce something with our quality.
We'll pop to Portugal and an event celebrating the nation's knack for making things, and thinking about how design is about more than bloated fairs and showy furniture. Plus...
We made shoes for fathers and sons, and this kind of shoes, like Albus, a classic line, it's exactly the same leather shoe with sole, and exactly the same for son and for father.
When it comes to smart shoes, Italy is still putting its best foot forward, and we'll see what steps the industry is taking at MICAM, the fair in Milan. All that coming up right here on Section D on Monocle 24. Now, the fine folk of the UK capital, plus plenty of visiting industry sorts, are winding down and taking a few deep breaths after another London Design Festival, which finished last week. As part of the many varied events and gatherings, the London Design Fair at the Old Truman Brewery, just off Brick Lane in East London, is a seemly place to take the temperature of the industry through its tight selection of small brands, new talent and timely exhibitions. We dispatched Monocle's own Daphne Karnesis, and she brings us this special report.
Design festivals and trade fairs around the world aspire to be the meccas of the design world, often uniting exhibitors under a single roof, a place where traders come together to make an impression, launch their career, and secure lucrative orders. While it's certainly convenient to host design festivals and their trade fairs in a single vast convention centre, there's a dynamism behind scattering these events around different parts of the city too. The London Design Festival, which just completed its 15th run, is definitely a city-wide affair, with venues from Exchange Square to Granary Square and Hammersmith's Olympia. Perhaps nowhere quite celebrates the shift back to the creative arts and the importance of making things like East London. The Old Truman Brewery just off Brick Lane plays host to the London Design Festival's largest trade fair by footprint. In the space of 10 years, founder Jimmy McDonald, a former interior designer himself, has led the London Design Fair from occupying a small portion of the brewery's ground floor to a three-floor spectacular with some 500 exhibitors. When I visit on the four-day fair's final evening, director Jimmy McDonald greets me with the enthusiasm of a newbie and the confidence of a veteran. After spending the whole year travelling across the world, scouting exhibitors and mulling over the best trade fair practice, he's clearly enjoying the fruit of his labour. And he tells me why this year's fair is in the right place, with the right content, at what he believes to be the right time.
We travel the world to go to international design shows, and there's always exhibitions or independent makers that we see that we really want to invite and get back to London that we feel are appropriate for our audience. One is Envisions by Finza. So Finza is a big Spanish wood structure and veneer brand, and they're working with a Dutch group called Envisions to reimagine their veneers, working with a number of designers. And they've created a little mini cityscape downstairs of reworked veneers. And the colours and the textures and the palette and the space they're in, that is certainly one of my highlights.
Why would you say London needs a design fair?
Well, it's very simple. We have a London Design Festival, which is a celebration of design, and it's a 10 or 14 day period. And every city needs a hub. We've always prided ourselves on being as international as possible. So more than 60% of our content this year is international. So in one Dutch pavilion, for example, which we've never had before, there's 74 designers and companies. And that makes it, per head of space, absolutely the most international event. And London's a very international city, so it should be that way.
And was it important to hold the event here in kind of the creative hub of East London?
Well, it's just appropriate. You know, we started here because we needed space for our show in the same way that designers needed cheap studio space. And it's kind of grown in parallel. And the center of London has moved from the center to east, placing us and where we are now today in the center.
And what about the political situation in the UK at the moment? How do you think it's affected the design community here?
I think everyone's quite frustrated. They're totally unsure of their status, at least temporarily. The news yesterday from whatever political party it was from was encouraging for the creative industries. So we have at least 2 years of the status quo will remain as is. So that's very good for the industry, I think. We certainly haven't seen any effect, negative effect, from Brexit, let's say. We still have our dominant country pavilions are from Europe. London is still seen as a massive market.
Political headlines about Brexit haven't yet eroded the international art community's perception of London as the multicultural melting pot that it is. 60% of this year's exhibitors hail from abroad, the largest number at the fair yet. Greek designer Marika Rapoglou studied architecture at Parsons School of Art and Design in New York, and it was only earlier this month that she launched her homeware brand, Rock Salt Living. Marika started by telling me about those first two busy days at her stand as a first-timer at the fair.
Well, the first 2 days we were open to the trade, which was a great experience because there were a lot of people that came from the business. They asked for wholesale prices, they asked about the brand. It was a great chance to get out there and be approached by people that are interested in retailing our products.
And tell me a bit about Rock Salt Living. What was the idea behind the brand? You're very new, you just launched a week ago, right?
Yes, we're very new. We just launched on the 6th of September. It's been a great couple of weeks since then. The brand is inspired by the natural world we live in. We do ceramics, wood and textiles, all handmade in Greece. And we give great attention to detail and quality and really want to work with people from Greece as we have a lot of craftsmen and artisans that are really talented and no way out to actually present their work. Our ceramics are all handmade on the wheel. We use terracotta clay from the south of Greece, from Crete. We dip it in porcelain and we glaze it and fire each piece 3 times to get this finish. All of our wooden products are, again, all made by hand. They are made of solid Niangon wood. It's sustainably sourced from Ghana, and we've selected it particularly for its water-repellent characteristics that make it perfect for kitchen use.
And what about the London Design Fair in specific? Why did you choose to come to the London Design Fair?
We chose to come here because there are so many brands that are exposed. We've been coming here over the last few years to look at brands, and we thought it's the best place to start for brand awareness and get to know other people and keep in the loop.
So you've been here before you actually came to exhibit?
Yeah, we came as visitors for the last 3 years. Kept in contact with a lot of exhibitors the last years, and they all recommended it. So definitely wanted to be here.
Now, the London Design Fair may have a reputation for shifting furniture and hosting product launches from lighting to textiles, but it's also an opportunity for the industry to reflect on the issues facing it. This year's fair sought to highlight an innovative material through its new Material of the Year award. The prize went to Jesmonite, a sustainable material patented by the eponymous British company. It's known as quite the chameleon of building materials and can be used to replicate the appearance and texture of any surface finish in any number of colours. I caught up with London-based artist and designer Zuza Mengham, who was selected by Jesmonite's inventor to create a series of 5 angular sculptures using the material. With a finite amount of marble in the world and an energy-sapping process to extract it, Zuza tells me how Jesmonite might start creeping into our kitchen counters.
It's been brilliant. I mean, Jesmonite, they're actually a really brilliant company to work with. They're really helpful and they're really interested in seeing how the material can be used for different applications. And the great thing is they have a different range of jasmonites for different uses. So yeah, they've been great to work with, and it's been a really exciting to be picked to come and do an installation with the material.
How would you describe it to someone who can't really see what it looks like visually in terms of the patterns?
I've had a lot of people come over and ask if it was some kind of stone, which is interesting because actually the colours are quite synthetic to a certain extent. You can see they're quite painterly, and there's almost painterly marks in them, lots of built-up colours. But they do have a quality of ceramic or stone, but obviously because they're not fired, they're kind of, for me, they sit somewhere in between looking like a plastic and a ceramic. And jasmonite was really brilliant because it's water-based and non-toxic. It's a lovely material to use.
Can you give me some specific examples of how it can be used?
Yeah, I mean, for instance, if you use the AC730, for its technical name, that one's great for, I think it's got a granite base, so it's slightly stronger. You can use it for worktop surfaces, outdoor applications. It's really good, actually. There's an artist called Alex Chinnick who's used it. There's some really huge outdoor sculpture installations, so you can really see the kind of scale you can get. And even restoration on older buildings, so it's really versatile. It's much gentler on the environment, and it's got a mineral base, which is it's part liquid and part powder. And you can add various additions, like I've used some ground up marble stone and obviously the lichen, so it's a brilliant way of incorporating lots of natural elements.
It feels at times that the world is getting sick of the design fairs, festivals and shows that dominate the calendar, but the London Design Fair achieves the right mix between commercial savviness, London's lore for young talent, and a thoughtful take on not just how and why we build, but what we build with. For Monocle in London, I'm Daphne Karnizis.
Monocle's Daphne Karnizis there, exploring the halls of this year's London Design Fair as part of the city's annual London Design Festival that drew to a close last week. Now, many visitors to London for last week's festival will have enjoyed the city's decision to disperse the events throughout showrooms and spaces around town. But few will have ventured far enough south to see one of the capital's finest examples of improvised urbanism, Walter's Way and Segal Close. Concerned by a growing waiting list for local authority housing in the mid-1970s, a group of driven individuals at a South London council, or rather taken with the architecture of Walter Segal, pushed for a self-built home scheme, and they got it. Documenting the residents and buildings of two tiny roads in Lewisham, containing 20 self-built homes, there's a fetching new title by Alice Graham and Taram Wilku that's been published on the subject. The Flick Through by Park Books is as much a study on community as it is about pretty interiors and apt architecture. It also offers a clever solution and compelling coda to London's troubled housing market today. The metaphorical Section D mailbag is always open to queries and suggestions. Do get in touch by emailing our producer, Ben Rylan. He's on br@monocle.com. This is Section D. Do stay tuned. Now, after years as a broke Atlantic outlier and having battled to reverse its budget deficit and keep talent, Portugal is at last garnering attention for its design know-how. Good news for brand Portugal, particularly as it comes in the form not of expensive chairs or pumped-up design events. The youthful team behind the firm Portuguese Makers is trying to foster an altogether more thoughtful take on the nation's craft heritage. Their recent Craft Week shunned big branding and networking and instead looked towards what they think design should be about, the act of making things. Monocle's Soma Tarek reports.
10 minutes to make, a final design presentation in the paper at all, if you have it.
At the top of an eclectic palace museum in the bougie Portuguese beach town of Cascais, a cluster of designers, architects, and even a social worker are frantically drawing. Sitting alongside workbenches in the ornate attic of Casa Santa Maria, this group of around 20 people are trying to meet an impromptu challenge set by furniture designer Mark Mordo. They have to design a wooden stool no higher than 45 centimetres in 1 hour. Mark will take the best design back with him to his Barcelona studio and make it himself. After lunch, the group will join him in a nearby studio to produce a small paperweight. Over these 6 days, six different materials are being explored and celebrated under the guidance of six specialists from all over Europe. The star of today's show is obviously wood, but a couple of days ago, participants left with a leather purse in their hands. This highly hands-on approach to what is effectively a company launch event is unusual, but as the young trio behind Portuguese Makers argue, this is the best way to create a buzz about their new venture. Inviting the best in the field to explore a local material culture that, according to them, deserves more respect.
I think the environment that we are having here over this week until now is very involving, and people really want to create something, and it's the spirit of the brand. We have the international design, the national design, and in the afternoons we have the Portuguese craftsmen working. So this week is what we want with the brand. Different materials, different objects, different design, but with the stamp of Made in Portugal.
It's mandatory that we have to be close to others, close to other countries, close to our other backgrounds. So we believe in collaboration, we believe in working together, we believe that our cultures can meet, and still that we can produce something with our quality. So we have knowledge that we are losing because the knowledge are coming from old people. In a few years, we'll lose this forever because right now in Portugal, everyone is going to college. So we don't have people that are looking to these craftsmen and these makers and these workshops. So we are thinking that this is the time. If you want to do something, we want to catch everything that is going on in Europe, but at the same time, we want to do it here.
After 2 years of research and a lot of investment, Anna, Vasco and Inês are using this launch to absorb as much as possible. Their brand will eventually produce small collections of objects for the home and workspace, and it seems like they are learning as much as the participants from these collaborative workshops. While many are capitalizing on Portuguese cool at the moment, this week is more than big name talks and swapping business cards. From traditional processes to semi-industrial production, participants are gaining key insight into what it means to actually make something. On one day, two technicians from Portugal's biggest company, Amorim, alongside designer Hugo Passos, show them how to work with arguably the country's greatest natural resource, cork. Stockholm-based graphic and product designer Clara von Zweigenberg, the creative director of Hay in Denmark, who has also worked with companies such as Lissoni and Nike, is here to lead the paper workshop. Despite being one of Scandinavia's top creatives, her back-to-basics approach means that she fits right in.
I mean, it's such a good combination of materials that they have put together this week. And I wanted to sort of make it possible for the participants to try different ways of folding paper, basically. And the idea was that we would take the letters that forms Portuguese Makers in the end. I wanted them to be, I guess, as enthusiastic as I am in the possibilities with paper and how accessible it is. I'm thinking that they may be inspired to sketch more 3D, like hands-on. For me, I have a harder time to visualize something in a 3D program. I sort of have to just touch it and feel it and see the volume and the colors and sort of what happens. And then I get inspiration from what happens in front of me more than maybe thinking it out.
The main themes that we thought about was to get something done and for real and get your hands on things. So yes, it was really important to get connections and to get a network and all of that, but also I think we get to know, or the people get to know us, because we we gave them the opportunity to do something else and to do something creative.
We never thought, even in our best dreams, that this will be so productive. It's amazing.
The Portuguese Makers Craft Week has certainly created a buzz around making in Portugal. Its approach to welcoming the specialised and the curious goes beyond the mere trumpeting of design values for the sake of branding. Let's hope that the brand itself will be just as innovative. For Monaco in Cascais, I'm Simon Tarek.
Thank you very much for that report, Saima. Now, despite competition from around the world, no nation has quite managed to follow in Italy's footsteps when it comes to high-end footwear. Every 6 months, industry players gather in Milan to show off their latest creations at MyCam, the sector's premier event. The venue provides a platform for hundreds of producers from around the country, plus plenty of foreign brands, to meet buyers from across the globe. Last week marked the 84th edition, with spring-summer models for 2018 on display, and we dispatched Monocle's Milan correspondent Ivan Carvalho to the city's sprawling Row Fairgrounds to pound the pavement in search of this season's trends.
From sexy stilettos to sober Oxford lace-ups, there are shoes for all walks of life at MyCam. 800 Italian producers shared space this edition with over 600 foreign brands as they rolled out models for next summer and looked to appeal to the changing tastes of consumers. A third of European footwear is manufactured in Italy, which exports about 85% of production. Still, this season, brands were keen to target their home market as well, as 2017 saw signs that after 8 years of declining sales, domestic consumption was on the up. Based in the Marche, the heartland of the Bel Paese's shoemaking business, Barleycorn is one producer that has eyed the growing trend of athleisure, which mixes sporty elements of athletic shoes with the comfort of casual footwear. Barleycorn's Alessia Vita introduced me to the company's latest offering from their popular Air collection.
The particular of this new model, Grecale, is the transparent outsole that is in EVA material, and inside there is a real cushioning with the air, and this is a very comfort effect because it's a very anti-stress and anti-shock system, and there is very light performance because EVA, it's not like rubber, so it's very light and very comfortable and flexible. So it's the best combination of the technology for the outsole and the top that is classic and stylish.
No, what's interesting here is I see, you know, you have this very Air Jordan kind of sole, and then on top you have a very classic leather upper, but very, very thin. I mean, it's very, it's like an unlined suit, how light and thin it is.
This is our strategy to respond to the trend active wear, because we think that the people want more and more to wear easy shoes, but also with high technology contents. You can wear the same model with a suit or at job, or if you want to wear them to walk on the seaside, you can wear when you go out for aperitifs, because it's no more as in the past one shoes for one things, but we think that you want to choose one style for your style.
Foreign brands also promoted sophisticated styles that merged sporty looks with something dressier. Piola, a French brand, offered elegant sneakers for men and women made with eco-friendly materials. Antoine Bernier, sales director at Piola.
It's a classic sneaker with very easy to identify through like sober and elegant uppers that we are trying to highlight with like very colorful tongues, reflective, fluorescent yellow and orange tongue. All our outsoles are made by 60% of rubber, wild rubber from the Amazon rainforest. So it gives basically durability and softness of this outsole, which is pretty unique, first thing. Then we source all the best and premium Napa and suede leather from Italy. And then we got a very like premium insole with a cemented construction. And the factory we're working with works with Alexander McQueen and some pieces of Yves Saint Laurent. So the execution of the shoe is pretty perfect. Basically, we are targeting classic 40 years old customers who are looking for a very fairly priced shoe, really elegant and still classic.
While Piola and other leading producers now opt to outsource to Portugal, homegrown Portuguese brands also made a point to exhibit at MICAM. One emerging label is Wolf & Son. Based outside of Porto, their unique concept is to design matching formal and casual footwear for fathers and sons. Wolf & Son manager Cristiano Lopez walks me through their Albus model, an Oxford lace-up.
What's great about this concept is sometimes we have a ceremonial party, a wedding, and you don't find the same shoes for your kid. We made the Albus shoes. It's a classic shoe made with the premium leathers, and the sole it's leather too. And about men's, we need to think about kids, and sometimes it's a little difficult to find materials to make exactly the same comfortable for men and for kids, because the kids want to play and everything.
So I see here, Cristiano, with your models, you have some of these formal dress shoes.
Yes.
So for the formal ceremonies where father and son are attending. And then also I see some of the sneakers
yes.
as well. Talk about the construction of your sneakers.
Our sneakers, to the Central Park, you go with another kind of sneakers. We try to make shoes for every moment that we have in your life with your family, with your kids, with our sons and daughters.
Thank you very much for that report, Ivan Carvalho. Next week, we'll hang out with a firm investing in getting the art of signage right.
Anyone who can write A to Z can feel that differentiation in people's handwriting and their touch, and it all resonates with us a little bit, I think.
Section D was produced by Ben Ryland and edited by Christy Evans. I'm Josh Fennett. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.